The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. North Korea is going to test missiles weekly, says senior official to the BBC. Oh, that's good. We have three aircraft carrier groups now going to the Korean Peninsula. Yesterday, I saw Alan West. He was walking in the hallway here at the Blaze and Mercury Studios. And I said, hey, Alan, when's the last time we had three carrier groups in that region? And he said, let me think, Midway? Oh. Oh. By the way, the United States has 10 carrier groups total. Three of them now are off the coast of North Korea. That's war footing. He said, you can't hold that war footing very long and you lose credibility. You're sending a message. This either implodes or explodes, but it is over. You don't put three carrier groups there without it exploding or imploding. We'll have more on that in just a second. Also, the accused Facebook killer, Steve Stevens, faced multiple evictions and financial troubles, and his mom wasn't very nice, and I don't feel bad for him at all. At all. They haven't caught him yet. But maybe we should look at the victim for just a few minutes. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Do you ever think about your legacy? I mean, I know dictators do that. Presidents do that. But have you really ever thought of the legacy about what are you building? What do you leave behind? None of us are really going to be remembered by a monument. Most of us will never have a book in the library that people go to read about. What are the intangible things that you leave behind just because of the way you live your life? Last night, I sat with my eldest sister, Coletta. And we sat around the dining room table for about an hour or so. She's writing a book. She's writing a pie book. It's a recipe book. She said it may just be for, you know, her family and the kids.
Are you consulting on it?
I am consulting on it, yeah, kind of. I'm not.
Need any help?
Yeah. I'm not helping her with any of the words. I'm just testing all of the pies. And I suggested to her one of the last lines. I said, consider this. I remember people because of pies. I remember people because I remember my grandmother used to make lemon meringue pie for me every time. And it was just for me. And she would make pie for each of us kids. But she would make a lemon meringue pie. I would always get one every time I would come to her house. I remember walking in the front door and smelling it, and I must have been 8 years old. The legacy she left for me was that lemon meringue pie says to me, I love you. What is it that we're passing on to our friends and our family and our children? For better or for worse, what you do today is building your legacy. I did an interview with the New York Times yesterday. Oof. It was in their style sex section, and it was about watches, and it turned into time. He said, why are you fascinated by watches? And I said, I don't know. I have three clocks in my kitchen. There's something about time, and always has been with me. Pat will tell you I'm a freak on clocks. Maybe because, for some reason, maybe it's the legacy of my mother. She left me suicide. And maybe it's that that makes me understand and made me understand even at a small age that life is short. And life is precious. I'm going to tell you about a man who was born in 1942 when the world was in the thick of fighting World War II. He was a teenager when desegregation of American schools was just getting started. He was in his 20s during the heart of the 1960s civil rights movement. He worked as a foundry worker. Foundry worker, we don't have foundries really anymore. Taking metal and melting it down, then pouring that liquid metal into a mold, and it created new shapes, new tools, new parts. We have 3D printing now. Boeing just got the FAA to approve the first titanium part for one of their new jet airliners. It's all 3D printed. First time. They said it'll save Boeing $3 million per plane just to have this one part 3D printed. Foundry workers worked with their hands. They would pour that liquid metal in, and then they would remove that new shape from the mold, and they would sand the rough edges, and then they would scrub the molds and prepare for the next batch. It was hard, honest, and old-fashioned work. This man raised 9 children, had 5 daughters, 4 sons. Wasn't easy. It's not for any of us, especially when you get a divorce, and he had a divorce. He fixed cars on the side just to help keep food on the table and clothes on the backs of his children. He was a dad that was there. One of his daughters, Debbie, he said, he always taught her and her sisters that they needed to fend for themselves and not depend on a man to provide for them. She said he was gentle and sweet. One of his sons said he was quiet and always respectful. Eventually, he retired. His daily trek to the foundry was now replaced with fishing on Lake Erie. His kids had grown. He had 14 grandchildren. Among them, they affectionately called him the junk man because his daughter Debbie said he'd pick up things off the street and fix them. He'd pick up bikes and he'd fix them. He'd go on long walks, usually on the weekends, and he'd carry an empty plastic shopping bag and he would collect cans and turn them in for money. Debbie said he didn't need the extra money. He just something that he did. He was 74 years old. His name was Robert Godwin Sr. He was on one of his long walks. This last Sunday afternoon, he was carrying a plastic bag. He held that empty plastic bag up as if it were a shield in the last moment of his life. I accidentally saw yesterday his shooting by the, quote, Facebook killer, end quote. I'll never get that image out of my mind. As he held that empty bag up as a shield and said, no, wait, I don't understand. He was carrying that plastic bag looking for cans along East 93rd Street in Cleveland when what he had left of his life was cruelly stolen from him and his family. And none of us would ever know his name had it not been for Facebook. He would have just been another guy and a statistic on the streets of Cleveland. The real tragedy of Robert Godwin Sr. is he wasn't done creating his legacy. He still had a lot left to give to his family. He had just left his son's home to pick up some basketball equipment and take it to one of his other sons on Easter morning. The opposite of Godwin's legacy is that of his killer. No real legacy there. What has he created? Blame, hate, selfishness, darkness, despair. I would hate to be a member of his family. The legacy he has left. Today, I want you to spend just a couple of minutes today. At some point in your life, you have a down moment. Just think of the legacy that you're creating. Even small gestures can mean the world to people. This last Sunday, Robert Godwin did not, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about what he's leaving behind. What am I building with my legacy? But he was working on it nonetheless by visiting his son. The hugs that he left his son and his daughter-in-law now mean more than any of them could have imagined. Some good old-fashioned work. We are the foundry workers when it comes to our own legacy. We're fashioning the molds, we're pouring in the liquid metal bit by bit, day by day, and we are shaping that legacy. One of Robert's daughters, Tanya, said, "He taught us about God, he taught us about love, he taught us about forgiveness. Just to know that I'll never hear my father's voice again is devastating." I want you to hear the legacy that this man left behind on Anderson Cooper last night.
I wasn't going to ask you this, but since you brought this person up, and I'm not going to use this person's name in front of you, but if this person is out there and they're listening, what do you want them to know? Obviously, you want them to turn themselves in, but what would you say to them?
I would say turn yourself in. That would be number one. I mean, because although, you know, I do believe in forgiveness, I do believe in the law, meaning when you break the law, there's a penalty for breaking the law. And this man broke the law by taking my father's life. And so although I forgive him, there is still a penalty that he must pay for what he did to my dad. And so I would want him to turn himself in. And you know what? I believe that God would give me the grace to even embrace this man and hug him without anything. I truly do. It's just the way my heart is, and it's the right thing to do. And so, you know, I just would want him to know that even in his worst state, that he's loved, you know, by God, that God loves him, even in the bad stuff that he did to my dad, that he's still loved, and that he has some worthwhile, even though he's going to have to go through many things to get better. There's worth in him. And as long as there's life in him, there is hope for him, too. I do believe that.
Boy. If that's the legacy I could leave behind, children that thought, believed, and behaved like that, my life would have been well spent.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un has a diabolical plan, according to CNN. In case tensions with the U.S. continue to escalate, they are going to start kidnapping Americans. Oh, that's going to be...
That'll be fun.
That'll be work.
Yeah.
So, What happens with three aircraft carrier groups? You know, there's one battle group in the Mediterranean. It's the Sixth Fleet. That has one carrier, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if I've ever seen more than one carrier in the entire Mediterranean. Maybe two, maybe. We have three.
I mean, they are signaling that there is a legitimate change in policy.
They're signaling.
Big time.
They're signaling war is coming.
Well, they're saying, because they've been saying this, that the policy of strategic patience
is over.
In other words, we're going to stop appeasing this guy.
Yeah.
And we're going to put the hammer down. And I, you know, I'm not sure that's the best course of action.
Mm-mm.
Again,
I talked to Alan West yesterday. He was getting ready to go on Dana's show. And I talked to him in the green room for a few minutes. And he said, Glenn, I know you've been saying it for a long time. He said, I was saying it under Clinton. You have to take care of these guys. You have to. They're going to get nuclear weapons. And then all the options are bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't we say that? We're headed right now. We are facing in North Korea what we're going to face with the mullahs in Iran.
Yeah.
Think about that. What do you think we're going to do when Iran gets nuclear-tipped missiles?
You talk about crazy people. They're stark-raving nuts. The mullahs in Iran are just nuts. That's not a good scenario.
I will tell you, I'm not sure. I think this guy is legitimately nuts.
Kim Jong-un?
Yes. Mm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I think he's legitimately nuts.
Yeah.
I don't think the mullahs are nuts. I think they're religious zealots.
Well, yeah, but to the point of being nuts.
Right, yeah. Like the people who like charm snakes in church are also religious zealots, but maybe nuts.
Well, okay. Maybe I see that. Back in just a second. I don't want to sound like this is a good thing by any stretch of the imagination, but how come we haven't caught this guy yet? I mean, don't we have all this technology that's been spooking the hell out of all of us?
I don't know. Maybe we don't have the technology we think we have, because we should have been caught a long time ago.
I mean, we are all so spooked by, you know, how the government could just grab you at any time. They can get your cell phone.
They know where you are every minute of the day.
This guy's uploading videos and like, hey, I'm on Snapchat and look at me. I mean, how do we not find him already?
Yeah, I go back and forth between like the Edward Snowden view of the world, which is they have everything all the time, to this where like they, you know, when the most basic things happen, this guy is, how do we not on the phone with them?
I mean, on 24, we can transfer video to their screen on their cell phone 17 miles away.
Right.
What? We can't find this stinking guy?
No, seriously. And I'm so torn on this because I want this guy caught.
The Cleveland murderer.
And I can't believe that we don't have him in custody. And
it's
I got up this morning and I thought, this guy's, look, I mean, he's not the lead story today. He's not the lead story today. And by tomorrow, he certainly is going to be, you know, down. Does he decide, you know, I got to do something else? We got to catch this guy before he kills again. And who knows? Maybe he already has killed people. We don't know where he is. And so I really want to catch this guy. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, wow, maybe the technology that the government, we think the government has, they don't have all that, because I can't believe we haven't triangulated this guy's position.
Yeah. I mean,
but maybe he's just completely gone
if
off.
If they could turn on your computer in the middle of the night and watch you sleep, you would think they could find this guy.
And he still apparently has his phone, because they pinged him in Pennsylvania. He's turning off the phone. Well, what happened to the whole thing of, oh, they can turn your phone's never off?
Yeah.
Well, apparently his is. You know what I mean? They know which phone it is.
So weird.
It's really strange. It's really strange.
How do you even drive around these days without them knowing where you are? With cameras?
What kind of car does he have?
Yeah.
What kind of car does he have? He has a newer car. How do they not have a tracking? In fact, he has like a Camaro or something, doesn't he? A newer or something like that. He has a newer car.
It was a Ford Fusion, right?
Oh, was it a Fusion? No, he owes money on another car that wasn't a Fusion. But Fusion, I mean,
that's a lot of technology in the Fusion.
Doesn't the Fusion have the hard drive for all of your music?
I think it does.
And like
you can record your like CDs or your iPod into the car, and then the car just holds your music.
Nice.
I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that has a, you know, wouldn't necessarily get you found unless you played the music really loud. But still,
I'm just saying that it's got a lot of technology in it.
They do.
That's a voice recognition.
I mean, boy, you know,
Ford
I
cars have a lot of technology in them.
Yeah, the Fords of today. You could take the greatest car from the 70s or 80s and compare it to the crappiest Ford today.
And it's
and the new Ford is better than anything else.
Oh, I don't even think you have to go back that far. You could be in the 90s and easily make that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you go back to these older cars, which I have one, as we were kind of talking about in the break. Yeah. You mentioned your MG. I have an MGB as well. I bought one because I just loved them when I was a kid. So I have it's nothing. It's a 78 MGB. It's just fun. I just love it.
One I wanted to have. I had about a 71, and I really wanted to have
the hot 78.
Yeah, it was still used at the time I bought it. A 78 still would have been used, but that was a great car.
But driving that car, you realize how far we've come. I mean,
wait a minute. That's English.
No, it was a crappy car even for the time.
Always sucks.
No, you're right. It was a crappy car even for the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, just the basic, I mean, you know, the very basic, like for example, the car has no air conditioning. And it's like, I mean, does that even exist in a car anymore?
It was a soft top. It's a convertible.
It still is. But I mean,
that's your air conditioning.
Yeah, I know, but not today.
When I grew up,
a convertible that's being sold today that doesn't have air conditioning in it. Good luck.
I never thought of it that way.
I mean, like those features are, and then add on the technology. Obviously, you know, this between the stereo and GPS,
just the way the cars
and
run,
just turning the car. This car has no power steering.
No, it has rack and pinion steering.
Right, I know. That's what I'm saying.
You don't want power steering. That rack and pinion was an upgrade
at the time. It was the big thing, but now. I could drive a car with my pinky.
Rack and pinion steering.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big thing.
Rack and pinion. Wait. Rack and pinion steering, though, I believe is still the thing for a real sports car.
I'm sure it is.
But I mean, it's not going to be as hard to drive as this thing is. Like, just doing the little 3-point turn I have to do to get
impossible.
It out.
You don't want a car that doesn't have.
I remember having to crank that steering.
You should skip the gym on those days. If you drive a car from the 1970s, you could skip the gym for
you
sure.
You should drive. You think that's hard? You should drive my 1958 Apache truck.
Didn't you get rid of that yet?
No. No, my wife gave it to me as a birthday, and it's beautiful.
I know, it's really
it's
nice.
Absolutely
I thought
beautiful.
You were going to get rid of it.
I drove it. What you want to talk about? You know, only driven by a little old man who only drove it once. It's that I drove it. We had to get a. I just got it. And my daughter got into the car, Hannah, and she said, "Dad, I'd love to learn how to drive the truck." And I'm like, "Ah, come with me. I'm gonna run to the Walgreens and get something for Tanya." So we're driving down the road. I get into the parking lot of the Walgreens, which is maybe a mile and a half away. I'm winded. I'm like, "This is the hardest damn car I have ever." And I realized why my grandmother never drove.
Right,
we had a truck like that. My grandpa always drove. My grandmother would not have been able to handle that truck. I mean, it is tough. It is a man's truck.
That's why I need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about that. Really, the cheapest car that you can lease for a couple $100 a month, it now has tons of technology in it. It drives so easily and smoothly, gets decent gas mileage. Like, I mean, all the things that, you know, have been tough for car companies to do this entire time. They all do know. All of them. A Kia, the cheapest cars. I mean, you talked about South Korea. I mean, Hyundai used to be a joke.
Oh, it was a joke.
Those cars Kia's are really good now.
The Sonata, what is that, $65,000 now?
The Genesis?
That thing is really nice.
Even their lower models are really nice. They're comfortable. They ride really smoothly. They get good gas mileage. They have
it's
great
It's just weird because technology. My perception of Hyundai is that it's a, you know, it's a crap can.
Because of the way it started. We, as our generation, looks at stuff like Kias, like the generation that we grew up with looked at anything from Japan.
A Toyota.
They looked at Toyotas and went, that's a piece of crap. It's made in Japan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're like, no, guys, Japan is beating the snot out of us on everything now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. I mean, that was really the, you know, every era, I guess, has its, because it gets built into you. And over time, even when the product improves, it's impossible.
If you've ever driven into, like, if you have a Cadillac, I wonder, because you have a Cadillac, but you have the sports Cadillac. Mm-hmm. If you drive in a Cadillac or you drive in a Mercedes or something like that, the technology in the car, not nearly as good as it is in, like, a Ford,
Fusion.
And I think it's because the people who can afford to buy a Mercedes, they're old. They're old, and so they're not into the technology. Mm. Ford Fusion has to have, because it's your entry car, so it has to have all of the technology that everybody would expect.
It's basically an iPhone on wheels. Like that's what a lot of it really is.
Did you hear that Elon Musk said that next year, let's talk about this tomorrow. Write this down because we're out of time here. Mm-hmm. Let's talk tomorrow about the new Elon Musk Tesla semi-trucks that are coming to the market next year. That means not only that it will be an electric truck, but that is the first step towards self-driving semi-trucks. How many people in the truck driving industry, I want you to tell your trucker friends to call tomorrow. I want to know, what is the union, the truckers union, saying about self-driving semi-trucks? What are they saying to the workers? Are you hearing anything among the truck drivers that self-driving semi-trucks are coming in the next 5 years and you're going to be out of a job? This is going to be the first massive impact of technology will be the semi-trucks, unless the government and the unions get in the way. And my guess is that's exactly what's going to happen.
Possible.
The unions will pressure the government and they'll say, you can't just get rid of these. It's not safe. It's not this. It's not that. And the unions will pressure the government to be able to stop the semi-trucks from being fully automated.
Mm-hmm.
That would stink, right? I mean, that would be...
Get in the way of progress. Yeah. You're a progressive, really? Are you? You're a progressive. You're getting in the way of progress?
Getting in the way of capitalism and companies making money.
Yeah, but if we can automate the highways, think of how many lives we'll save. Think how your products will be moved faster and better. You don't have to stop, pull off on the side of the road and stop. Think of the time of getting a product from one place to another. I mean, they don't stop.
Truckers are getting on their CBs right now and talking about it. They're talking about Breaker 19.
Their CBs?
Yeah. They're talking about, we got to be here. Yeah. Good buddy, on the show tomorrow.
All right, on the show tomorrow, make sure you do a convoy to the Glenn Beck program. Because I really like to hear from truck drivers on what you're hearing.
Globally?
The pig bin, you want to back that thing up?
Globally, 1.3 million people die in car crashes every year. 1.3 million people.
What is it, like 56,000 in the United States alone?
Tens of thousands, I think. 37,000 in road crashes in the United States. I mean, those are numbers with technology could solve at least 90% of them.
But you know what I heard from I read an article from somebody in Washington.
And that wasn't enough, right? According to that article,
In Washington, it was a person in Congress who said, if we can only save one, if we can only save four out of every five people, is that enough?
And what happened to if you save one life, isn't it worth doing?
Right.
That's what we this always is
if we can only
discussion.
Save four out of every five, is it enough?
But I mean, if you see, there are dangers to automated cars. I mean, if you look at the documentary, The Fate of the Furious, in which Charlize Theron actually controlled with an iPad, all the cars in New York City had them crashing out of garages onto people.
No, people were being terrified.
Guys, that's not a documentary.
No, I saw it.
No, it's not a... I'll explain it later.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, but again, we're just talking about, you know, what happens, you know, you get these self-driving trucks out and somebody hacks into them and, you know, they mow down a lot of people. It'll be like what's happening now with Facebook. Here's almost 2 billion Facebook users.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a murder, and everybody's saying this could be the end of Facebook Live. 2 billion users, and one has done this. They've had
They've had a few
incidents.
They've had a few incidents.
They've had some suicides. They've had some rapes. They had some really bad stuff happen. But again, it's 2 billion.
Right. I was just looking at some sites' rundown of it. It was less than 10 instances.
Right. So put that in
2 billion people, less than 10.
That's better than any medication that you buy over the counter that everybody trusts.
And by the way, Facebook had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
Right. And it wasn't even on Facebook Live, even though everyone keeps saying it was Facebook Live, which it wasn't. He just uploaded a video.
I mean,
there's.
And how can you ever stop that?
I mean, you can't.
It's too good.
Kill video on Facebook, which is
not going to happen. The side effects of Facebook with this are in the 0.000 percentage. I mean, it's one of the safest things out there, and yet everybody's freaking out. It was a bad thing, but one guy out of 2 billion.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
The accused Facebook killer, Steve Stevens. Do we have to call him the accused Facebook? I mean,
how about not calling him the Facebook killer? It has nothing to do with Facebook. He posted a video of it happening. He's a murderer. It's not Facebook's fault. Jeez.
He faced multiple evictions and financial trouble, and it was his mom's fault, and it's his girlfriend's fault, and I don't care, but can we get him off of the street? Also, yesterday, Trump called Erdogan in Turkey to congratulate him on his contested referendum. Okay, a couple of things. We should not be congratulating a dictator on his seizing of additional powers. But on top of that, I can't take the press saying that Erdogan is now a dictator and he's doing all kinds of things to screw the country of Turkey when Barack Obama said that was his best friend on the world stage and he had the most in common with Erdogan and they praised Erdogan at that time. Now, suddenly, a phone call saying, hey, congratulations on the referendum, and Donald Trump is tangling with a wannabe dictator. I can't take the hypocrisy anymore. Lots to talk about. We begin right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So yesterday we were talking about Survivor. Gee, who knew that it was even on? We were talking about Survivor and how this one guy was fired because at the council meeting, the tribe meeting, he said, you know, he was trying to say, this guy's not being honest with us. And the way he did it, he said, you want to tell him about your sex change? And he just outed that this person, this guy, was used to be a woman.
Yeah, he asked him, why haven't you shared that you're transgender? And it didn't seem like a big deal on the show, but he was fired back home, I think, from his job in Atlanta. And isn't that what you do on those
reality shows? There's a couple of things. Yeah. There's a couple of things here.
You try to get other people kicked off the island, and he was saying the guy's being dishonest.
Right. So there's a couple of things to factor in here. One, I don't think you out people. I mean, it's just like, you know, you're doing something and you're going to out me for being a Christian? Are you going to out me for being gay? You're going to out me for being transgendered? That's just not cool. But however,
aren't they both gay?
Yeah. Well, hang on before you get to that. This is a reality show, like Pat said. Yeah. This is a reality show. These don't have rules like that.
And if you're in the closet, probably a bad place to go is a reality
show. It's a reality show, right?
It's going to come out.
Right. How did the guy find out that he was transgendered? It was either fed by somebody on the, on the staff and the crew, or it came out in some conversation. Mm-hmm. Well, so, okay. If you don't want to be outed, you probably shouldn't be on a reality show where it's kill or be killed. The second thing is what Pat said. The guy who outed him was gay, which, two thoughts on that. Then you should know how outing is wrong. I mean, would you have liked it if somebody came over and, you know, before you told your parents and everything else, they were like, oh, by the way, your son is gay. What? So he was outed, but he was outed by a gay guy. So, compassion? Second, transgender, does this now trump plain old everyday homosexuality?
Which special interest group wins in this particular battle?
For instance, transgenders now beat women. Women, there's almost no chance of winning against the feminist movement or a women's movement.
Well, women always bathroom issue, right?
Except for the bathroom issue. Now, transgender beat our daughters, our children,
pretty amazing,
and our wives and women. They don't count for anything up against transgender. They lose. However, if you're a lesbian,
like a weird NCAA tournament going on.
I know. If you're a lesbian, I believe you beat transgender.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. This is
I'm not sure anybody beats transgenders right now.
I think so. I've read several articles that there's this thing because lesbians are saying, you're not, I don't remember what it was. You're not real women or whatever. Something that nobody else could possibly ever
say. Seems insensitive.
Yes. And I never see them called on it for it.
Because I feel like there certainly would never be a law passed right now that gay people couldn't do something like go into whatever bathroom they wanted, right? Like that would never happen. However, there are still laws that are passed saying that transgendered people can't go into their chosen bathroom, right? So I think it feels like maybe...
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think there's a problem. I don't think society has a problem with a transgender. You're talking, or is it transgender or trans? What's the difference between transgender and transsexual? Which one has had the plumbing fixed? I don't think anybody has a problem if you're having the plumbing fixed.
If you're transsexual, then you've actually had the surgery, right?
Right, and it's transgender. I'm just taking the hormones and everything else. I mean, if you're committed to it, I think that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Those who are committed to it, I don't think people actually have a problem, you know, that you've committed to that gender. I think what America has a problem with is not transgendered people, but perverts, people who are using that to be able to get in.
And more
to
often
a bathroom.
Than not, probably heterosexual perverts.
Well, yeah.
Probably just using the transgender
probably
thing.
Probably 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Using the law.
And that's what we've said from the beginning yes. was going to be the biggest problem on this.
Correct.
Is now you've given the out to the heterosexual pervert, which they don't even seem to acknowledge that that's our problem. They don't even care that that's the issue.
Well, because they say that that never happens, and they're dismissing
well,
your science. You're a news denier. I mean, that's
it
happening.
Has happened now.
It's happened.
It has happened.
It's happened twice to people on our own staff.
Yeah.
Twice. I mean, you know, if it's happening in your own circle of friends,
you're giving
it's happening.
Them a legal out. If some perv wants to go into the bathroom and ogle women or girls, now they can say, well, I was identifying as a woman.
Right. Even though I'm wearing men's clothing.
It's mm-hmm. a legal defense, right?
I mean,
you know, because obviously it is very rare, right? I mean, like you're saying, you know, like it's happened a couple of times and it has. The vast majority of people who go into bathrooms don't deal with this. The vast majority of transgendered people who go to, you know, the opposite
right.
bathroom of
well,
their
the vast majority of people still, aren't perverts.
Right,
so.
Exactly. Like, so this comes down to when someone who has a
Jeffy, current company accepted.
Yes, oh, good, when you have you. A Jeffy who uses this as an excuse, do they have a legal basis that you, by the way, can even question? I mean, if someone comes in here and say, someone goes to court and says, I'm transgendered, I was in the opposite bathroom, can you even try to say, no, you're not?
No.
I don't think you can know, even do
it?
That.
Was it Dave Chappelle? Do you have that Dave Chappelle cut? Is that Dave Chappelle where he talks about, how's the African-American losing here?
They are.
Yeah, he's like, we've lost our place. We've struggled forever and ever and ever, and now, where are we? And he's not the only comedian. Who's the other comedian?
Yeah, I mean, Patton Oswalt did something kind of on this where, you know, again, these are not conservatives.
No.
These are liberals who right. are like, wait a minute,
and
guys.
So was, what's his name, Louis C.K.
Here's Dave Chappelle on this, on the gay movement.
Yeah. Right now, I don't think it's sounding that loud. I think it would be louder
it
would be better.
Well, he's got a very quiet voice. I don't know if you've ever okay. seen him live, but he's very, very, very quiet.
I get it, though. I understand why gay people are mad, and I empathize. You know what? And I'm just telling you, this is a black dude. I support your movement, but if you want to take some advice from a Negro, pace yourself. These things take a while. Just because they pass the law doesn't mean they're going to like you. Because Brown versus the Board of Education was in 1955. Somebody called me in traffic last Wednesday. It's so long it takes a minute.
He's really funny.
He is. He's
really funny.
He's really genius.
So we have a bunch of clips here of comedians. I'm going to just take a quick break here with Mr. Pat Gray to make sure that he has the most updated emails.
Saying that maybe there's an F word or two.
I'm saying we need to be careful to make sure you're playing
we'll
the
take
most
a, We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll make sure that we have rinsed out their mouths.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. So, you know, we're talking about political correctness and who's at the top of the food chain? Used to be white males. That's long gone. You're at the bottom of the food chain.
Oh, the very bottom.
Very bottom.
Long ago.
Then it was females, but females are no longer at the top. Then it was homosexuals. Homosexuals are not at the top. It might be transgender, but I don't think so. Who's at the top of the female? It's not the African American anymore, as you just heard from Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Now listen, we've got about four comedians that are right now out who are not conservative
at all.
At all.
Exact opposite.
Play this cut.
This is
that you
Patton
just put
Oswalt.
In. Listen to this. Patton Oswalt.
I could not be a more committed, progressive, feminist, pro-gay, pro-transgender person, but I cannot keep up with the glossary of correct terms. I'm trying. I want to help, but holy it's like a secret club password. They change it every week, and then you're in trouble. That's not the word we use.
It was last week. I have hemorrhoids. My ass is falling out. I want to help. I know I'm an old cis white f***er, but don't give me because I didn't know the right term. RuPaul got into s*** for saying tranny. RuPaul. RuPaul, who she laid down on the barbed wire of discrimination throughout the 70s and 80s so this new generation could run across her back and yell at her for saying tranny.
What? So
that
good.
Is a fact.
I mean, that's amazing you know, progressive as comedians are even noticing how far this has come. And they're not going to agree with the conservative audience on the points behind it, but that's kind of the issue here, is you're even taking your own allies and people who are rooting for you and want you to get everything that you want,
and
you're still torturing them over these things.
Same comedian, Patton Oswalt, was it his nephew that's gay?
Yeah, I think
that came
nephew.
To him and was talking about how bad things
or maybe
were?
Maybe a friend's nephew.
And he moved
something.
To L.A., came out of the closet, told his parents. Parents went, duh. Now he's happy. He's married, he's happy, running a business. But he has a nephew who goes to his old high school. And so he's really protective of this kid because his nephew is openly, proudly, defiantly gay, going to high school. And my friend is like, if anyone gives him I will burn that in town. He's so protective. And I get it. So he went back for Thanksgiving. And he's talking to his nephew, and he goes, is everything okay at that school? You know, I went there. I didn't have the best time. If you ever want to, like, talk to me about it, or how are things? Are they oppressive? Are they mean? And his nephew started choking up and said, yeah, you know, it's pretty rough there, you know. They're still really oppressive, and it's pretty harsh. And my friend, the way he put it to me was my inner Liam Neeson woke up, right? He was just, like, he was thinking, like, give me a name. Like, he just wanted to wipe out. But he kept his cool, and he was like, well, just let's talk about it. What's going on? Like, what are they doing to you? And his nephew said, well, you know, for instance, my gay, lesbian, transgender club at school, we wanted to have our prom the same night as the straight kids' prom. And they're going to make us wait 2 weeks to have it. So it's just really oppressive, you know? And my friend had to stop himself from saying, you need to shut the up because I don't think you know what oppressive means.
How true is that?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, because, you know, there was no gay and lesbian club.
Right.
My uncle went there. There was no gay and lesbian prom. The fact that you had to hold it on a different day, that actually seems more special. Like, you got your own day. it's amazing that to see that happening in, you know, in the world of, you know, pop culture. I mean, comedians who are, you know.
And comedians lead the way.
And they're the ones that will constantly walk over lines that the rest of society has drawn. You know, they've done this forever. They did it with religion back in the day. Right.
And
they've
done
it.
They didn't do this before. They didn't. Mm. They weren't ever making these kinds of points in the last 20 years. They were not making the, hey, get control. They were not making those points. They were making the point of, we've got to move forward. We've got to progress.
Right. Look at these hicks,
you know,
that are
look
stopping
at these hicks
them,
that are
right?
stopping.
And they still make those points. There's no
yeah,
doubt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, this is, you're right. It's the opposite. It's like, wait a minute. You know, like, I mean, we're trying to help you. And still you're torturing us over these things.
Yep.
I mean, that RuPaul point is amazing.
It sure is.
I mean, I don't remember that story, but I mean, if RuPaul is getting heat for not being transgender friendly enough, you might be going too far here.
Yeah. You might.
You might be over a line.
Well, if you want to be a hate monger like that, Stu, then you can hate all you want. The rest of us know.
The rest of us.
The rest of us.
The rest
know.
Of us know.
Yeah, the rest of us.
The enlightened
know.
Ones.
The enlightened ones.
But the Chappelle thing is new. The Patton Oswalt's within the last.
I know there's a Louis C.K. thing too.
There's also a Jim Norton. Do we have a Jim Norton clip as well? His latest Netflix special has. I hope they edited this one. Jim Norton can
Yeah, he can get
if they
dirty.
Didn't if they didn't edit this. I just want to say goodbye now.
Yeah, no. It'll be just so stations are aware.
Thank you for the time spent listening to us and all of your support over the years.
We do have a delay built in, so if anything happens, you'll be fine.
Here we go.
But it's so funny, with the whole country is like trans crazy, and we're really obsessed with it, and it's so funny how when the new thing happens or becomes in the lexicon, you can't joke about it on TV. Like, I tried to do a Caitlyn Jenner joke on the network, like, oh, no transitioning joke. I'm like, well, it's not even a mean joke. And they're like, yeah, but we just don't like it. They've been marginalized. I'm like, look, just because you've been marginalized doesn't mean that you're removed from the humor spectrum like everybody else. Like, it wasn't even a mean joke. Like, first of all, the network canceled her reality show. How is your reality show? When you were on a Wheaties box, you're now a woman. You are a Kardashian. You've killed somebody driving. And the network goes, it's boring. There's just nothing happening. And I think Hollywood means well. I think their hearts are in the right place. But it's a little bit phony. Some of it is just a little bit fake. Because you know how they can't talk about Caitlyn without saying how beautiful she is? Have you seen how beautiful Caitlyn is? No. She looks like the gypsy from Thinner.
Oh, my.
Very funny. He's awesome. But I mean, look, I mean, that's, what, three big comedians. You also mentioned Louis C.K. Well, maybe we're writing that clip for tomorrow or something. But it's like, it's a bizarre trend, right? It's strange to hear from
it
these
shows
people.
That perhaps the PC pendulum is swinging back closer to the, you know, let's have common sense and being able to laugh at ourselves and each other just a little bit here. No execution for words. Safe zones are ridiculous. Back in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Have you guys seen the Dave Chappelle comedy specials on Netflix?
No, not yet.
Oh my gosh, they're funny. I watch them begrudgingly almost. I mean, I'm not a Dave Chappelle fan. Back in the day, saw some stuff, thought he was funny, seen some clips that I thought were funny. I am a huge Jim Gaffigan fan. I think Jim Gaffigan is just brilliant. I watched the Dave Chappelle special on Netflix, and there is something about that guy that he is a master of comedy. He walks with this way. I mean, I don't know even what it is. But he just, I think he's the best comedian alive today.
He may very well be. I mean, I saw him live a couple of years ago after, like, it was when he was first coming out of his sort of extended silence after he left. And I went there again, same thing, begrudgingly, like, not really thinking much of him. I wasn't a huge Chappelle Show fan. I mean, there's funny moments, but he just owns the room. He owns it. I mean, like,
you saw him 2 years ago?
Yeah, probably about 2 years ago. He just commands your attention in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, it's a weird, and I didn't know if it was because I hadn't seen him for, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
When did he disappear?
I think it was around 2006 when he quit the Chappelle Show. Yeah, so.
And then went off and went to, like, Africa or someplace?
Yeah, toured the world
for
a while.
So it's that mystique that he didn't want the money so much. He didn't need the fame so much. He was like, I don't want to be that guy. That you just know he's speaking from a place of truth, his truth at least. And he's just, I mean, and he's saying things that you just haven't heard. I mean, when you got a black guy on stage defending the cops.
Yeah.
That's risky in comedy.
And
that's risky.
That's the difference. Like, so many comedians will spend so much of their time figuring out some new way to attack religion, for example. And it's like,
you're going to beat George Carlin?
You're never going to beat George Carlin at that game. That was something that was edgy at one time, right? Like, there was a time in our history in which it was hard to push back against religion. That time is long past. That's really difficult. Right. And it's what comedy should do.
If you don't have the audience, if a comedian doesn't say, oh, come on, at least once, come on, you know that's true.
Right. It should offend you. It should push your boundaries.
It should push. That's what good comedy does.
I mean, Louis C.K. does that all the time. He constantly has those moments where the crowd groans and isn't sure whether they're allowed to laugh. Even though they know it's funny, they don't feel comfortable actually laughing. Well, that should happen every time you go to a comedy show.
Look what Chappelle was willing to say in 2004 when he was doing a stand-up performance in Sacramento, California, and people kept shouting his catchphrase, his Rick James catchphrase from the show.
Which was what?
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Oh, okay.
And so he got frustrated and he left the stage. And then a few minutes later, he came back and he said to the audience, you know why my show is good? Because the network officials say you're not smart enough to get what I'm doing. And every day I fight for you. I tell them how smart you are. Turns out, I was wrong. You people are stupid.
Wow.
That's brilliant. Yes. That's brave and it's brilliant. Really funny.
Name the comedian. Name the George Carlin of today. I think it could be Chappelle.
Yeah. Probably.
He's really well thought out.
Because Carlin did the same thing. Like, obviously, Carlin was not conservative. But, I mean, you'd listen to him at times and you'd say, like, wow, that really, like, even though, if you're a liberal, you could like it. If you're a conservative, you could like it.
You could be a real religious person and listen to him on God and laugh all the way through.
Yeah. Louis C.K. is definitely in that conversation as well.
Have you guys seen Mike Birbiglia?
Oh, yeah. He's great. He's totally different style. Yeah.
I think he's one of the most brilliant storytellers. I mean, have you seen him, Pat?
No, I don't know who that is.
Oh, look up. There's a Netflix special. There's several of them on Mike Birbiglia. One is Thank God for Jokes, I think is his latest one. And he tells stories. And so he starts out and it's just like a running monologue with the audience. And he just starts to tell stories about his life or whatever, and it all ties in and wraps up at the end. It's really well crafted, really well crafted.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, Gaffigan's great too, and again, a different style.
Gaffigan is the quintessential comedian for these times. He doesn't offend anyone. He just doesn't offend anyone.
And that's like, I feel like that's while I think largely true, except for maybe the makers of Hot Pockets, who are frequently offended by his comedy routine. I think it almost
fat, pasty white people.
When you say something like that, it almost feels like, here's a guy who's just saying some honest things and he's getting along with everybody. Not it at all. He's an incredibly talented comedian. And
just talks about things that everyone can relate to.
It's a lot harder to be funny without the F word.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
you know,
without throwing people under the bus can be really, really funny. He throws himself, on the tracks every time, and so there's no malice to what he does.
And Jeff Foxworthy does that forever, right? I mean, Ron White, Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy. That's what those guys do.
Yeah.
That's the Jeffy School of Comedy right there.
I love those guys. Yeah,
and we've had them on.
Those guys.
But like, it's totally different styles. Well, that's what's great about it, though, right? You watch the Jim Gaffigan show that he had for a couple of seasons.
Tried to watch that with the kids. Boy, don't do that.
It's not. And it's a little edgier.
Yeah.
However, edgier. Really funny.
Really funny.
And he quit that show legitimately, and this excuse is never real. But with Jim Gaffigan, it was to actually be with his family because he was spending too much time on it. The show, they wanted the show back desperately. It was really funny.
Is he back as the Colonel now in that $5 for five meals?
I thought he was great as that.
I think he's back doing that.
Colonel. They wouldn't let me be the Colonel. I want to be the Colonel.
You'd make a great Colonel. You already have the hair for it.
I already have the hair for it. I look like I've been around buckets of chicken.
Yeah.
I mean,
you'd be a great Colonel.
I'd be a great Colonel.
Have you thrown your name into the
mix? I have not.
Come on.
And you look like you've been preparing for the role for quite some time.
I have been.
I'm throwing Glenn Beck into the mix right now.
I'm the next Colonel right now.
Try my chicken.
And you don't have to sound a thing like him either. No. So,
yeah.
Well, I don't think he actually.
We should cut our own Kentucky Fried Chicken with me as the Colonel and just put it out there.
Just give it to them.
Just show them what they're missing.
Show them what you're missing.
And then maybe they'll jump on
board. You could have some of that. You could have some of that, KFC.
I mean, it seems like a good idea.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
You as the Colonel. I could see it. I could definitely see it.
I'm just saying.
That's a weird ad campaign. Very unique because they keep changing. Like every few months, they change who impersonates him. And it's really not an impersonation either. It's just dressing up in the outfit.
Yeah.
They're not even trying to sound like him. It's kind of weird. So it's a weird presentation.
It's kind of a parody of the character.
Right? I guess. Yeah. But, it's strange, I mean, though, that his family's okay with that.
Yeah. I don't know.
The Colonel's family?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Colonel's family has been involved with KFC in forever.
Yeah, probably not.
Maybe not.
I mean, you know how that guy started? Do you guys know the story of KFC?
Yeah, out of his trunk, right?
Yeah, to the back
driving
of
around with
the
his
trunk
recipe.
Of his car. I lived in Louisville, where I passed the place on the highway all the time, where he just, you know, on weekends, he'd just have his big, I don't know, Cadillac or something, and he just opened up the back.
And Dave Thomas was one of the first guys that I think agreed to use his recipe. That's why he and Dave Thomas of Wendy's were pretty close.
Dave was the one
I didn't know that.
Dave Thomas was the one that talked him into being the Colonel.
Yeah.
And promote his own product.
Yeah, Thomas helped him out. Maybe Thomas worked for him. There's an interesting tie there somewhere. Yes. I'd have to bone up on it again. But you know where the first Kentucky Fried Chicken was?
Alaska?
No.
Wasilla, Alaska?
I'll be disappointed if it's any place in the United States.
It actually is in the United States.
Mm. I'm disappointed.
You're disappointed. It's in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Why? Mm.
Isn't that fascinating?
No.
Okay.
Why? Why was it there?
And you would think it would be in Kentucky.
Yes. Yeah, it's Kentucky Fried Chicken, but right?
That was the first thing that popped in my mind.
Yeah, there would be somewhere
but
in Kentucky
was too
since
obvious.
It's named Kentucky Fried Chicken.
And it would have been boring if that would have been the answer.
Right.
Right.
Not quite as boring as Salt Lake City, but still
right.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
We're just talking about when did 24 end?
Last night. Last night was the final episode.
12. Like 12 episodes, so they should have called it 12, not 24.
Yeah, they should have called it 12. Well, with about 10 minutes left in the hour, they go to commercial break and come back, and they start with the clock like they always do, and then it says 12 hours later, and the clock speeds up really fast. It goes to 12 hours later, and then they just finished up the show.
That sucks.
Really weird. Cheap.
So, was it good?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty good. It was as good as you could probably expect without Kiefer Sutherland on it. I without Jack Bauer, do you have 24? I didn't think so, but I watched it every week. So,
and it was good.
It was pretty good. Yeah. The ratings weren't that great. Super Bowl Sunday was when it debuted, right?
Yeah, after the Super Bowl.
How do you watch television with commercials?
Well, I don't. I tape it. Record it and then watch it later. But the first episode had 17,500,000. The second episode, 6,225,000. It ended up with 3.1.
But the first one was post-Super Bowl, right?
Yeah,
but going from 6 to 3 is
but still, it hemorrhaged viewers the whole time. And I don't know. Maybe people just didn't accept it without Jack Bauer.
Not something. I mean, man, I don't know the last time.
You're apparently not interested.
I'm not interested at all. The only thing on television that we watch is HGTV. That's it. It does not. The television does not switch from that unless it's news.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what we watched on
History Channel. We also watch History Channel, I should say.
I mean, if you want to watch something, just DVR it and watch it when you have to, you know, on your time.
Yeah, but I mean, HGTV, I'll come home and the, you know, TV will be on and it'll be HGTV and everybody will be, you know, they'll be in the kitchen or something and then they'll say, okay, you ready to see your new house? And then they'll come around the corner of the refrigerator and they'll be like, and then,
so you don't have any... Oh,
that color stinks in that house, huh?
Oh, you should have seen it before. It looked really... It's a lot different.
Really.
So you don't watch any current shows that are, like, currently coming out with, like, new episodes?
24 was the only one I've watched years.
No, I don't watch anything.
You watch a lot of Netflix, right?
I watch Netflix.
Like House of Cards, when that comes out, I will watch that as fast as I can.
But I'm not watching it on TV.
Right. I mean, we've watched a lot of things that are broadcast on television, but... It's DVR.
Do you guys see The Wizard of Oz, the new Wizard of Oz on NBC?
Definitely not.
No.
It was actually really good. Mm. It had Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
Was it a different story?
It was.
It was.
No, it is. It's a completely different story.
Yeah, that's not nothing based on Wizard of Oz is interesting to me at all. The Wiz? Wasn't The Wiz something?
Yes, it was.
With Michael Jackson?
Yes, it was.
That was genius.
It was.
That was genius.
I thought it was actually pretty good. I mean,
It was. The Wiz was great.
The Wiz was awful.
Famously awful, right?
Oh,
The Wiz was great.
It's Always Sunny. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia did something based on The Wiz in this past season. Which again is one of the few shows I do watch on television, and it was first of all tremendous, but second of all, like I didn't know any of the references. I'm like, what?
No,
like, the Wiz? Like, am I supposed to be so in tune with The Wiz that I'm going to get all these jokes? I did not have to.
Yeah, no. But wasn't so Diana funny. Ross and Michael
yes,
Jackson? In it.
Yep.
Yes.
So weird.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know which one played Dorothy.
I don't either.
That's a fair question. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
How did you not get a Michael Jackson on the path there? I don't even understand.
Thank you. Back in a minute.
If you would say that.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Pomona College students say there's no such thing as truth. No. Truth is a tool of white supremacy. Oh, you got to be kidding. Alexander Dugin and Steve Bannon's ideological ties to Vladimir Putin's Russia. Vanity Fair says Steve Bannon isn't through with Trump just yet. And Trump has said there's a big shakeup coming in the White House staff. We begin there with so much more right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I love this. This is from Business Insider. 10 ways North Koreans use technology differently than other countries. Here's the first one. Almost no one uses the internet. I mean, that's not using it differently. That's not using it. North Korea banned Facebook, but has built a clone. Well, Facebook is, Facebook is banned. The regime seems to like the concept. Country built a clone, which was discovered by DIN networks. The clone was fully functional, allowing users to sign up via email and post messages on each other's wall. It isn't clear whether the clone went on to attract more users in North Korea after the hack or not. I mean, what are you going to say in a communist country? What are you going to say with a clone of Facebook? Mm-hmm. You feeling comfortable with that?
Yeah. You know, I'm not too, I just don't like these new policies, I got to say. Who's with me?
1 in 10 North Koreans has a smartphone. Again, that's not a way they use technology differently. They're not using technology. I mean, if you said they use, their smartphones for a spade in their garden, then that's using it differently than us. They don't have it.
One way they use breathing differently, they're not breathing.
Their lungs. They can't make any international calls.
Yeah, that's not again, them using it differently.
That's not using technology. It's not doing it differently.
North Koreans do use PCs.
Do they use them for like a doorstop?
No, listen to this.
That would be using it differently.
Listen to this. North Koreans do use PCs, but mostly only the elites.
They're not using it differently.
PC access is so restricted that USB sticks are a fashion accessory. Now, there you go. That's using it differently.
Okay, so what's a fashion accessory?
The USB sticks.
Oh, wow.
They're like, I don't know if they're
like a necklace?
Earrings or I don't know what it is.
Nice.
I bet you those look good. Bet you those
a
look
USB?
Good. Oh, come on now.
Stick around your neck.
Oh, man. Yeah, a 4MB stick hanging from your ear.
Cheap Chinese tablets are only for the elite. Some people own TVs, but they can't watch much. TV ownership is unusual in North Korea. Boy, can you imagine? What is this country?
So bad.
If that wall ever comes down, you're just never going to be able to. I mean, how are you ever going to be able to talk to them? They're in a different world. They have no idea what's happening around the country, around the world. They have no idea. Sets are pre-tuned to North Korean stations. Police visit households that have televisions to check whether the TV settings have been tampered with.
What?
Nice.
So you can only watch certain...
Yeah, remember that Gestapo radio that we have in the museum?
Right.
They did the same thing.
Oh,
They blocked the BBC, and so this blocks all the Chinese channels, the South Korean channels, so you can't watch anything
else. Don't be messing with it.
You imagine living in a place where they could just knock on your door and say, we need to check your TV?
I mean, that's using technology differently.
No. It is. People have a choice just between two mobile phone carriers. I mean, this is a bad thing. There are still people saying that the deregulation of the phone industry was bad. We just had, the Ma Bell system.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd be North Korea.
You know what they're still doing those military parades, too.
Yeah, I know. I think anybody who has the military parades, if you have, this is a sign that you just need to be annihilated as a government. Mm-hmm. If you have military parades... Big pictures of your leaders on the sides of buildings. Mm-hmm. If your troops march in goose step, that's the sign that you're
right. The higher you goose step, the more evil.
The
you
more
are.
Evil you are. I saw them on the parade over the weekend, and they're all goose stepping, and I'm like, clearly evil. These people all should be wiped out.
And then, for the first time ever that I've ever seen, Kim Jong Un was wearing an actual suit, like we would wear in the West.
No,
it was pretty close.
It was like a Pavarotti jacket for thinner people.
Yes, and that's not a good look for him.
No, it's not. Did you notice? Usually, like his pants are like
they're giant navy bell bottoms.
They're not bell bottoms. If you look at them, they're like the size of the waist
at the top of
the thigh. All the way down.
All the way down, yeah.
It's bizarre. And it looks like everything on him looks like you need a tailor. You don't have a tailor?
He's got such a weird body shape that I think it's tough to fit him with clothing.
Yeah, that's a good
one. But he's the ruler.
Yeah.
Right? Who was it I heard the other day that said, I think it was one of you guys, say that he's kind of in between of, being fat and given up.
Well, given his life circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. Because like Jeffy, for example, might be a little
overweight.
However, he is limited by his circumstances.
Well, and I'm athletically overweight, unlike Kim Jong Un.
No, but he's limited by his circumstances. For in that we don't pay him a salary. He doesn't have any income. He's basically
there's not much
homeless.
He can do.
Whoa! This is the opposite. That's what makes you work out. If you're Kim Jong-un and everybody has to say, oh, dear leader, whew, you are smoking
you
hot.
You are sexy.
But this
you
is my
are
point.
Sexy, then why work out?
Right. There's nothing in Kim Jong-un's life that would lead him to be in shape. Right? Like,
yeah. Oh, so you're saying he should be fatter.
I think he should be fatter. Because why would you stop at, what is he, Jeffy, 350? With something?
No, he's not.
No.
He's probably
280.
Yeah, 280. He might.
No, I don't think he's that heavy.
At one point when he had knee surgery and stuff, he probably pushed 3.
And there's not a lot of cool things you can wear when you're built like that, right? So that's why he does the Nehru jacket.
What is the deal with the Nehru jacket?
He looks like he's the fifth member of Herman's Hermits in the 1960s.
What is the deal with all the Chinese leaders wear that, and it was never a good look.
But you get your haircut like that, wear that jacket, that's a good look.
Your comrade jacket.
Hillary Clinton thinks it's a good look. Yeah. She wears it all the time. She's the only Western person to wear the Herman's Hermits outfit.
And why doesn't this guy wear the uniform? I mean, if you're going to be a dictator.
His dad did, right?
You got to get yourself a snappy uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think, honestly, you look, because again, I don't know what the uniform would look like on him. There's not a lot of military guys that are overweight.
Gehring.
Yes, there's a. I said there's not a lot. There wasn't one.
Right.
Yes, there's not a lot. It's not common. You can name him because
when
he was
at trial for war crimes, they were looking and going, "We can't hang this guy.
No,
how are we going to hang him? There's no way we can hang him. We've got to shoot this guy.
He's got the Jeffy problem.
Yeah. Can't you make the argument though? Kim Jong Un basically is basically God.
What he's saying there is you're overweight. That's what he's saying there.
Fat.
I understood.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
You break whatever they use to hang you.
So Kim Jong-un in this country is essentially God, right? Like, he rules the country.
Well, he claims to be,
He claims to be God, right? He can do anything he wants. If anyone looks at him and says, wow, it looks like you've put on a few, he will murder them.
Right.
This is his role in this nation. Right. Anyone who says anything about him, if I was in that position, I think he's actually, I would eat everything.
You'd
I think
like
he's
Jabba
actually exhibiting restraint here.
You'd be Jabba the Hutt.
The fact that he's only 300 pounds is actually pretty impressive for him. Again, like, he can do anything he wants. You get any food he wants. He can spend anything on food. No
would
one can say anything bad about
would
him.
Would you say you would live the life of Jabba the Hutt? You'd have somebody on a little chain in a swimsuit or whatever, and then you would just have people feed you, and you'd be like, rah, ah, 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 ah.
Yes. That's what we would all do. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, I think we would. If now, the rest of the world may not, or the population, but the four of us.
Anybody with self-respect would not do that.
No, but
we obviously we would.
Right.
Hello.
<You're> right.
I mean, sure, you'd have moral lines. I would think probably putting a princess in a neck collar and a bathing suit is probably not the greatest idea there. But I mean, as far as
how would
the
you
food
know
goes,
if everybody is telling you that's genius?
Yeah.
It's true. But I mean, again, like, you get to this point of the food thing, you'd never stop eating. You'd never stop.
Never.
You would be, my 600 pound life would be like the minor leagues compared to the show you'd be on. I mean, no Houston
can I ask you a question?
Can
I'm stuck at, you wouldn't put the princess in a neck collar. You've just snuffed your brother out at an airport. You're killing
Jabba
everybody
the
who
killed
his
brother at an airport.
No, this guy did. Oh, I mean,
yes.
You've killed everybody who disagrees with you. I'm going to put a princess in a neck collar. I mean, I think the princess is happier than being killed.
Yeah, that's true. She actually survived it. I'm just saying that, you know, there's a lot of things that Jabba may have participated in.
The princess doesn't
in.
Realize how lucky she has it.
That's as exactly right.
As Kim Jong-un is participating in many horrible, horrible things. But we're just, you know, we're talking a little surface here. You know, a lot of people are going to go into depth on these issues, and we will not. We'll stay right on the surface talking about his weight and his dress.
And his haircut.
And his stupid haircut, which is reason enough to go to war with him. The haircut is so dumb that I think we should actually attack.
Seriously, this guy has all of the earmarks of a Hitler. I mean, a bad haircut, right? He's got the goose stepping troops.
Yep. The big pictures.
He's got the Doring fans with the giant pictures. And then they always, now Germany never really did this. But for some reason in the Asian countries, the dictators in the Asian countries, they always have everybody wear like certain color hats or something. And that spells something out. I mean, have you ever noticed that the dictator is always way up? Everybody else that's watching it is down on the street, but he's up on the big podium, you know, everybody can see him. He's the only one that gets to see what they're spelling out with their hats. It's like everybody else in the country have no idea that their hats are certain colors, and when they stand together, it spells out, you know, Kim Jong-un, you're the best, or whatever it says.
Mm-hmm. Usually that,
right.
Exactly.
He's the only one that gets to see it. Nobody else gets to see it. They're all down on the ground.
Surprisingly
the only
enough,
one that matters.
Right. He's the only one. He doesn't care about anyone else seeing
it. Nobody else needs to see it. He's just, he just needs to know he's the best.
Just put that hat on and get down there and stand where I tell you to stand.
Right.
The only other bring me some chicken.
The only other people who see it are the drones flying above. They all see it. Oh, we could bomb, but, you know, he's the best. So maybe we shouldn't.
Maybe what it says is Kim Jong-un is not here.
Could be. It's an interesting life he leads.
What do you think's going to happen? You know, did you see? Oh my gosh, there was this agonizing editorial. See if I have it. Agonizing editorial about from the New York Times today. I mean, you want to talk about your head exploding. It was about how Donald Trump has no... here it is. I'll just make your head explode. In times of crisis, credibility is an American president's most valuable currency. It's one thing for a foreign partner to doubt a president's judgment. It's entirely more debilitating when a partner doubts the president's words. Trump confronts twin challenges of North Korea and Syria, and he must overcome credibility gap of making his own. Goes on and on and on about how he has no credibility at all. Then says President John F. Kennedy demonstrated the value of presidential credibility at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis when he sent emissaries to America's allies in October 1962 to secure support for the quarantine of Cuba. He designated Dean, Acheson, the former Secretary of State, to deal with Washington's prickliest partner, Charles de Gaulle of France. When he offered to show de Gaulle the spy plane imagery, de Gaulle threw up his hands and said, "I only need the word of the President of the United States. That's good enough for me." Every country has a founding mythology. For American, it starts with our first president's youthful encounter with a cherry tree. Mr. Trump would do well to find inspiration in that story. You ready?
His youthful encounter.
Mr. Trump is challenged by relationships. Mr. Obama released more than 100 detainees from Guantanamo who returned to the battlefield, and Democrats made up allegations about Russians' efforts to influence the election. Mr. Trump's canards risk undermining his ability. Okay.
I hate it when canards undermine your ability.
So do you notice what he's saying? This is a guy who used to be in the State Department for Obama. He's saying that Donald Trump is saying that Obama released 100 detainees from Guantanamo who returned to the battlefield. Yeah, that was true.
And
that that Russians were influencing our election. Yeah, well, that was true. He then goes on to say that at least with President Obama, Putin's propaganda campaign made our job tougher than expected, but we had one Trump card that usually carried the day. President Obama had credibility. Foreign leaders trusted his word, even when they disagreed with his policies. Mm. How many times did we see that foreign leaders had no respect for President Obama? And by the way, he had credibility. How about the red line in the sand of Syria?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, he did make them pay for crossing the red line. He drew another one.
I know.
And
so now
here's what
the problem is with this show of force in North Korea. You can't send three aircraft carriers and then turn them around.
Well, you can.
Well, you can, but you don't. I mean, you show this kind of force unless it implodes. You're going to have to make it explode. You can't marshal your forces like that and then do nothing and just go back to a stalemate. So something's going to happen one way or another.
They're saying very specifically they will no longer continue the stalemate.
Right.
Like, I mean, they're not saying they're going to go to war, but they're saying we're upping the pressure and we're going to change this situation. No more strategic patience.
We've upped our pressure now.
Up yours.
That's what we're saying right now.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Every time I look up at a news channel, I see Mike Pence in South Korea, and I feel good about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I would feel good if I were him. I'd be like, what, is this a message of something?
Do you not like me?
Why are you sending me to the war zone? But if this thing comes undone, it may be because of Mike Pence. He's working overtime.
You're saying in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah, he's a very calm, balanced guy in a crazy world, and it's kind of nice to say.
And that is actually, it's interesting to see what happens with Kirchner and Bannon, because Pence is gone, because Pence is apparently, it's not a two-prong war, it's a three-prong war. And there's some really interesting things happening behind the scenes. We'll get into that political talk when we come back.
The Glenn Beck Program.
You see that Donald Trump has made millennials more politically active than ever before. They say 2020, election 2020, going to be massive one way or another because the millennials are activated and they don't like what's happening and yada, yada, yada.
You believe that? I mean, if they were activated last time, he would have lost. They weren't. If they voted for him like they voted for Obama, Trump would have lost.
But it depends on who the person is running.
Right.
I mean, if they go Marxist, if they go Bernie Sanders, you know, that might catch fire and actually win.
Well, rumor is they're going Andrew Cuomo, maybe.
Yeah, that's not going to
happen. From New York.
Please.
Andrew Cuomo.
Everybody's screaming for Andrew Cuomo. Here's the real problem with America. Yesterday, now this is our audience. Yesterday, glennbeck.com, about 6,000 people took this poll while we were on the air yesterday, and it was the tax quiz. I gave it to you yesterday.
Yep.
The average score was 55%.
Wow.
That means those questions were pretty simple, you know. And
yeah, there were some challenges in there.
Yeah, there were.
Maybe 80%. Average score, 70%. Yeah. Yeah, I can understand. Not 55%.
No. How many times did Jeffy take it, though?
Not this audience. Yeah, right.
If Jeffy took it a couple times.
5,500 times.
Okay. Well,
I mean, that's incredible to me. We don't know our own history about, you know, things like basic income tax. By the way, how charitable do you feel today? I'm crazy charitable today.
That's why I file for an extension, to draw the pain out even longer. You just want to drag it out and just let it needle you and let them add on some fees.
You pretty much do that every year, don't you?
Too many years.
Yeah.
A couple of years I've made it on time. But usually something is always going on that's absolutely insane between the beginning of the year and now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never get to it. So yet again, another extension. I've had a lot of them.
And the crazy thing is he never goes back and files his taxes. He files for the extension, then he just never does it.
I heard you got a call from someone in your office that said I hadn't paid taxes in 10 years.
I get now it's out there and you should answer for it.
I just did.
But that's a different story. You know, we were talking about Pence. You know, I have confidence in Mike Pence.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, the only thing gives me, you know, that makes me question Mike Pence is sometimes the blind following of Donald Trump on things like, you know, the capitalist system, I don't think it's working. Okay, Mike, what?
Yeah, he said something like the free market's been going on for a long time and we're losing.
Yeah.
America's losing. It's like, wait a minute. Actually, we're the most powerful country.
I think
this is also part of his gig as vice president, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, you excuse that at some level.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah Palin was, you know, gave a lot of things. Her and McCain disagreed on a lot.
He was a really liked governor, though, wasn't he? In Indiana?
Pence? Yeah, he did. He did pretty well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the most popular governor in America?
Okay, so this is incredible, actually. Let me give you the top 10. Number 10, Gary Herbert from Utah. 64%. Number 10.
Wow.
Tied with number 9.
I like Gary. Well, I don't necessarily like his policies. I don't know much about it.
Yeah.
But I like him. He's a nice guy.
There's four governors tied at 64%. Gary Herbert, Greg Abbott here in Texas.
Greg Abbott is only at 64%?
It's pretty good.
Abbott should be the number one governor in America.
Good for top 10. That's pretty good.
That is an insult to Greg Abbott.
Tennessee, Bill Haslam, and Nevada's Brian Sandoval, all at 64%. In sixth place, Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, at 67%.
Wait a minute. So far, aren't all of these guys are Republican, aren't they?
So far, all Republicans.
Yes, they are.
Fifth place, South Dakota, Dennis Dorgard, 68%.
Don't know about
him. Yeah.
Also tied at 68%. Vermont's Phil Scott, also a Republican.
In Vermont.
Wow. Kind of interesting. Number 3, North Dakota's Doug Burgum at 69%.
Gotta be also a Republican.
Number 2, Maryland's Larry Hogan.
Can't be a Republican.
also yet, a Republican.
He is.
You got to be kidding me.
73% approval
in Maryland
for a Republican.
Wow. What has he done?
Wow.
What pact with the devil has he made?
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's incredible.
A Republican governor with 73% approval in Maryland.
And 9 points higher than Greg Abbott.
Greg Abbott. That's crazy.
I'm telling you, America, Greg Abbott is the greatest. I mean, I'd vote for him in 2020. I'd vote for him. He is.
I don't think he's running in 2020.
No, he's not.
Against a Republican. Unlikely.
You mean for president?
For president. He's remarkable.
Yeah, he's
remarkable.
You could remark upon him, yes.
Yes. It just did.
Do have the ability to remark.
Shut up.
It's historic. It happened in history.
Yeah.
Number one governor approval rating in America, Massachusetts, Charlie Baker, 75%.
Holy cow.
A Republican.
Oh my gosh.
Is that
so
amazing?
All of them.
The whole top 10 are all Republicans. Number one, number two, and number four, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Vermont, Republicans.
That's crazy.
I mean, look, they might not be as conservative as you might want. And by the way, number 11 is Nathan Deal from Georgia.
Where do you have to go to get to the first Democrat?
Number 12, New York's Andrew Cuomo at 62%, which is, I wonder why, if that's...
Yeah.
But who...
He just fits New York. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, you've got the history there with his father.
Everybody's screaming, if I could just get another New York liberal to choose from.
Right.
I had Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now, if I could get Donald Trump and the governor of New York... Now that's filling
that
my
awesome?
Appetite.
Maybe we only allow people from New York to run for president.
Right.
Maybe that's a new rule.
That's it.
Constitutional amendment. How about the bottom 10? This is kind of interesting. So,
wait. When was this taken?
Very recently. Last week it was released.
Is the governor of Alabama the last one? I bet not. Even with that scandal, I bet his approval ratings...
That scandal's been going on a long time.
Yeah.
2013 it started.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So a long time.
Where is he?
Robert Bentley is who you're referring to. He has a 44% approval rating, which is not terrible.
Not terrible. He had his apology written by his mistress.
Well, I mean, she was like his chief of staff or whatever, so she would do stuff for him.
She would
a lot things. Of stuff.
I mean,
a lot
that's stuff kind of chief of staff you
she
want.
She did a
right?
lot of stuff for him. Yeah.
So he's actually in 41st place out of 49.
Who is below that
right.
guy?
So there's 49 governors in the poll because Nikki Haley had just left. So there's no South Carolina poll. Interesting one, because we were guessing at who would be the top and the other kind of off the air. Wisconsin's Scott Walker was guessed. He's actually in 40th. So he's only one slot away. Ahead of Alabama's Robert Bentley.
Wow.
Look, it's interesting. If you go
what's his rating
that?
Now? Is it?
He's at 46, which is not terrible for
a
blue state. Scott Walker.
He turned that state's economy around.
Yeah.
How does he have an approval rating so low?
I don't know. So 41st, Alabama's Robert
weird,
Bentley.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
42 is New Mexico's Susana Martinez, another one who's talked about for VP roles over the years.
Yeah.
Alaska's Bill Walker at 43% is also in 43rd place.
Wow.
Well, I think Alaska's got to be hard because everybody else is like...
They're so cold, they don't even know
what's
going on in that like, state.
Do you know? I mean, what Alaskan wants any government?
Right.
Yeah.
Alaskans are like, I want to kill a bear with my bare hands and my boy's teeth.
You want to use your
boy's
teeth?
You don't think Texans are like that?
Yeah.
Texans are like that.
No, they used to be. We have too much California in
it. Too many people.
Who lives up in Alaska except people who are like, I want to prove to myself every day that I'm alive. You're like, okay, all right. I
mean, but Sarah Palin had a really high approval rating when
she was shooting wolves from a helicopter.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's the secret.
Right.
Illinois, Bruce Rauner, 42%. Then this one surprised me, actually. Oklahoma's Mary Fallon at 41%.
I think she sold out on a couple of big things.
Yeah, the Common Core was one of the big.
Yeah, Common Core was a big one.
She came around on that one, right? At least a little bit.
Yeah, but nobody believed her.
Yeah. So she's in 45th out of 49. 46th place, Michigan's Rick Snyder at 40%. Now, he had the Flint thing going on in that, where he got some of the blame for that.
That would hurt.
However, you know, Trump won Michigan, and they got a Republican governor, and he's still got only a 40% approval rating.
And how do you blame the city's water thing on the governor of the state?
You know, I got to tell you, your water... If you can't, after 2 years, you can't put the water out. I mean, it's water. You use water to put fire out. When the water is on fire, you got to fix that kind of fast.
I don't think the water was on fire. It was had lead in it.
You just got to fix it kind of fast.
It was a little scary. So now we come off a cliff because we've gone through the first 46 governors. And we're still above 40%. Mm-hmm. Now we fall off the cliff. There are no governors in the 30% approval range. None. So you go down to 29% is the next approval rate.
And the governor of Alabama is not there.
No, he's way ahead of
20%. Who's got that?
Connecticut's Dan Malloy.
Oh,
at 29%.
It's hard to blame Connecticut on anything other than 100 years of nasty Democratic corruption.
Right, but they got their guy. Right? I mean, Malloy is that guy.
I know. Yeah.
And they should be thrilled with that because as a resident of Connecticut for most of my life, I realize that this is what they want with their state. This is what they choose every time.
And but they think that it's going to end differently every time. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You talk to them and you're like, no, neighbor, it doesn't work out. Remember, you've done this for the last 40 years, and it's why we're paying taxes so high, and Bridgeport is turning into North Korea. I mean, there's a problem here. Change the way you vote. And they're like, no, this is going to, no, he's great. The Democrats are going to be great.
Yeah.
They deserve it.
In second to last place.
Yes.
Kansas, Sam Brownback, 27%.
Wow.
That was interesting.
What the hell has happened to Sam Brownback?
We actually did a segment on this on Pat and Stu the other day, and it's like, it doesn't seem to be a real clear answer.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be.
There's been some, he lowered taxes, and they've had some budget issues. We heard that he lowered taxes and then didn't cut spending. So he only did half of the formula.
That's a problem.
And there was an issue there. And
as we learned from Calvin Coolidge, you've got to cut first.
But he was important. He was a popular guy at one point, senator from there. And that's really fallen off the rails there. And it was one of the reasons why they think the most recent, the replacement for Mike Pompeo, the congressional race, was much closer than it was in the presidential race. It was 7 points? He won by the Republican in a district that was heavily favored for Republicans.
Glenn Beck program.
888-727 back.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck program.
I can't find the story. It's it is just broken. And nobody has updated it yet. The Facebook killer is dead, self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Apparently, they found him in Erie, Pennsylvania.
And they cornered him and he shot himself. Also, he did not kill Facebook, therefore is not the Facebook killer. He is actually just a murderer, and the video was posted there, which has nothing to do with Facebook. Just thought I'd point that out for the 550th time.
In Erie, Pennsylvania, I mean, that's less than 2 hours from Cleveland. I mean, that's just up the road.
Yeah, there was reports he was even further away, but... in Erie, and thank God, because he was obviously an active danger to everyone he was near. So that is over. Thank God.
Any idea? We don't have anything yet.
I have Steve Stevens, a man who posted the Facebook video to Facebook showing him fatally shooting an elderly man in Cleveland, was found dead on Tuesday of a self-inflicted gunshot wound in Erie, Pennsylvania. Stevens was reportedly driving a white Ford Fusion, was found dead inside the car Tuesday morning after state troopers followed the car. Stevens was on the run since Sunday, thought to have been spotted as far away as Philadelphia on Monday. So there you go. In fact, Philadelphia, Glenn, happens to be just across a river from the least popular governor in the United States of America, to bring it back.
No way.
Yes.
Number 49.
49 of 49 is Chris Christie.
Oh, my gosh.
Massive failure. 25% approval rating, 71% disapprove.
Wow.
How did that happen? Was that all Trump?
No, actually, he had really tanked before that.
I think it's
the
Bridgegate thing, probably.
The Bridgegate thing, I would say, is the biggest part of that, because he obviously, was tied into that.
Bridgegate, and he's Mr. Climate Change. I mean,
in New Jersey, I don't think that hurt him that much. The issue with him was the Bridgegate thing started it, and he had already fallen from his heights at that point. The Bridgegate thing made it worse. Then he was so desperate, knowing his career was essentially over in New Jersey, that's why he ran for president. A lot of people argue. And then, of course, it's also why Christie, who is, you know, the guy you'd think would be would not be the one immediately tied to Trump was one of the first people to endorse him because he kind of saw it as his only way out of what the position he was in. Trump wins, and then he still gets a giant zilch out of it. So that sucks for him. But 25% last place for Chris Christie.
He's not coming back.
I wouldn't be shocked to see him get some role. He did have some transition roles with the Trump administration. I wouldn't be shocked to see him get something, you know, at some point. You know, he was very, very loyal to Trump in the toughest of moments.
I'll tell you, we should look at the policies of the top 10. They're all Republican, but let's see how conservative they really are. Let's see what's making them so popular in each of those states. And see if there's a thread, a real conservative thread that ties them all together. I mean, the reason why the Texas government is so popular is it only meets every other year. I mean, so they're and only for a few months. They're never in session. So everybody's like, I'm good with that. Who are they again? What do they do?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.